today I want to talk to you about hidden manna. We all know the story of the trials and tribulations of the Israelites as they wandered through the wilderness, and how Yahweh provided for them the unhidden manna. But there is also mention, in fact, Joshua mentioned the idea of hidden manna. So we have been examining, I've looked this up on my computer the other day, we've been examining since January of 2008, the seven assemblies written about in the book of the Revelation of Joshua the Messiah, which contains the seven greetings to the seven assemblies, the seven attributes of Joshua, the seven praises, the seven criticisms, the seven warnings, the seven exhortations, and now the seven blessings that Joshua describes in the second and third chapters of the book of the Revelation of Joshua HaMashiach. These blessings are conditional, granted to the worshipers of Yahweh who have the same faith as the Messiah. And that faith is obedience to Yahweh. That is Yahshua's faith, and it should be ours. He is our master, and so what else is he going to teach us except that which he is? The blessings he is promising to the assemblies, are not solely provisions of grace. Yes, they are grace, but they're not solely grace, but are part of the blessings promised from the beginning for obedience to the word of Yahweh, the law, the teachings of Yahweh, which offers life, that's the grace part, and death, that's the judgment part. Remember, to each of the assemblies, Joshua says, I know your works. He doesn't say, I know your heart. He says, I know your works. Joshua's blessings are granted when we agree and fulfill our agreement to walk with him as he walks with his Father. This is the way that it has always been, is now, and forever will be. Obedience to the Father. You recall Adam and Eve, not personally I know, but you recall as is written about them in the garden, Yahweh gave them two commands. Number one, do not eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And number two, go forth and multiply. In Genesis 1, beginning in verse 26, Genesis 1:26, we read, then Elohim said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on earth. So Elohim created man in his own image. In the image of Elohim, he created him, male and female, he created them. Then Elohim blessed them, and Elohim said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. That's the first commandment. Be fruitful and multiply. Note that this command was given before they disobeyed. In Genesis 2, beginning in verse 15, we read, then Yahweh Elohim took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. To tend and keep it. And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it you shall surely die. Here is what one may consider to be the first instance of the law of sin and death. Sin is the transgression of the law, and if you sin, you die. The serpent, which anciently means seducer, lied to Eve with a statement in Genesis 3, verse 4. saying, "You will not surely die." She and Adam partook of the fruit, containing the seed of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They disobeyed Yahweh Elohim and were cast out of the garden into a world of pain and suffering. A word now about the seed of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, as well as another seed. This seed spelled in my version of the scripture with a capital S. Genesis 3, verse 14. Genesis 3:14 reads, "So Yahweh Elohim said to the serpent, 'Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity,'" that means essentially hatred, "'between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall crush your head, and you shall strike his heel.'" Now, in the scripture, the Hebrew words there are exactly the same, and in most versions it reads, he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. But it also means strike and crush. Adam and Eve partook of the fruit containing the seed of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And they, Adam and Eve, produced good seed and evil seed, obedient offspring and disobedient offspring. The line of good seed included Abel and Seth, Enoch, Noah, Shem, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel, the line of that seed. The line of evil seed included Cain, Lamech, Ham, Canaan, Ishmael, and Esau. Today we can see people who we believe to be good people and those we view as bad. We ourselves continue to eat of the good seed and the bad seed and produce the same. None of us is either all good or all bad. And no matter how much of the good fruit we partake of, we are still not worthy of living in the kingdom of Yahweh. We are essentially doomed to die because we continue to eat of the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Mercifully, though, there was another seed in the garden, the seed within the fruit from the tree of life. Adam and Eve ate freely of that tree until the privilege was taken away from them by Elohim, who cast them out of the garden of paradise, and who in Genesis 3, verse 24, placed cherubim, which in Hebrew is ha cherubim, at the east end of the Garden of Eden, and a flaming sword which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. But how can we partake of the fruit of the tree of life? Is it available to us? Are we locked out of the Garden of Paradise? The parable of the sower is perhaps the most important parable taught by Yahshua, because within it is the answer to this question. If you would turn to the book of Luke, chapter 8 and verse 4. The book of Luke, chapter 8, verse 4, begins, "And when a great multitude had gathered, and they had come to him," being Yahshua, "from every city, he spoke by a parable. A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and it was trampled down, and the birds of the air devoured it. Some fell on rock, and as soon as it sprang up, it withered away because it lacked moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up with it and choked it. But others fell on good ground, sprang up, and yielded a crop 100-fold. When he had said these things, he cried, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Verse 9. Then his disciples asked him, saying, "What does this parable mean?" And he said, "To you it has been given to know the mysteries," that is, the hidden things, "of the kingdom of Yahweh. But to the rest it is given in parables, that seeing they may not perceive, and hearing they may not understand." That's quoted from Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 9. But looking back at Luke chapter 8, verse 11 now, it says, "Now the parable is this. The seed is the word of Yahweh." The seed is the word of Yahweh. "The seed is the teaching of Yahweh, the law of Yahweh, the Torah, the Tanakh, the Old Testament, and the Brit Chadashah, the New Testament. Here is the fruit, producing the seed of the tree of life. We are to eat of the word of Yahweh, plant its seeds, produce good fruit, and share that fruit with the world." Verse 12. "Those by the wayside are the ones who hear. Then the devil comes and takes away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved." Let me ask, lest they believe what? Believe what the Bible teaches. Verse 13. "But the ones on the rock are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy. And these have no root, who believe for a while, and in time of temptation fall away. Now the ones that fell among the thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life, and, most importantly, bring no fruit to maturity. But the ones that fell on the good ground are those who, having heard the word, with a noble and good heart, with an honest and upright heart, keep it." Keep what? "Keep the word, and bear fruit with patience." They bear fruit with endurance. My, oh my. How many times have these verses been preached without a clue that Yahshua was talking about keeping the law, the word of Yahweh? So how do we eat of the tree of life? By keeping the word of Yahweh, every word. There is another parable that falls in line with the parable of the sower of the seed. It's found in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 24. Matthew 13, beginning at verse 24, reads, "Another parable he put forth to them, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. So the servants of the owner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' And he said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' The servants said to him, 'Do you want us to then to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Going down to verse 36, we read, "Then Yahshua sent the multitude away and went into the house. And his disciples," again, "came to him saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field.' He answered and said to them, 'He who sows the good seed,'" and what did we learn about the good seed? It is the word of Yahweh. He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. Can anyone doubt that Yahshua came to teach the word of Yahweh and not something altogether different? Verse 38. The field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom. For they have kept the word of Yahweh and are growing as righteous trees. That's not in the scripture. I'm explaining here. The sons of the kingdom are the good seeds because they have kept the word of Yahweh and are growing as righteous trees, producing the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the tree of life, and sharing it with others. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all things that offend those who practice lawlessness. And what is lawlessness? It is sin. The bad seeds are those who thumb their noses at Yahweh, who seek only that which pleases them, who spread lies. Lies like, the Bible only says we have to worship one day in seven. It doesn't matter which day we choose. Liars who say we no longer have to obey the laws or the festivals of the Jews. Ignorant liars who say the Old Testament is only good for a few stories. Abominable liars. Now back to verse 41. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all things that offend those who practice lawlessness, and will cast them into the furnace of fire. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Can you hear? Can you see? The righteous who will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father are those who are lawful. They are filled with the law of Yahweh. They obey his commandments and are of the faith and testimony of Yahshua HaMashiach. Surely, we as a nation have inherited lies from our fathers. As well-intentioned as fathers are, they repeated what they were taught. They partook of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but did not partake of the tree of life. And as much as I might pray, Almighty Yahweh, do not hold them accountable for their ignorance. I fear that my words would fall on deaf ears. The Spirit of Yahweh gave utterance to Paul in Romans 1 and verse 18. Romans 1, 18 says, "For the wrath of Yahweh is revealed from heaven against all irreverence and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of Elohim is manifest in them, for Yahweh has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even," which means which is, "his eternal power and sovereignty, so that they are," and these are the famous words, "without excuse." None of us has excuse to disbelieve in a creator. verse 21. Because although they knew Elohim, they did not glorify him as the Almighty, nor were thankful, but became futile. And futile means fruitless, vain, and ineffectual. In their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. So, every time we study and meditate upon Scripture, we are partaking of the fruit of the tree of life. May it be so. But that's not what I came to talk to you about. And let's move on then to the subject of the sermon, which is hidden manna, found in the verses pertaining to the assembly at Pergamos. Remember, we're talking about the seven assemblies in the book of Revelation. This is pertaining to the assembly at Pergamos. Now, you may think, from what I just said, that we're not going to use what I just said. But what I just said is basically setting the foundation for hidden manna. This concerns the assembly of at Pergamos, where Satan sits, and where some members of that congregation hold to the doctrine of Balaam or the doctrine of the Nicolaitans. And these doctrines are essentially of pagan origin, and if you recall, Yahshua stated in Revelation 2, verse 6 and 2, 15, that he hates these things. Our verse is in Revelation 2 and verse 17. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it. That is our verse. To him who overcomes. Overcomes what? Recall the parables of the sower and the tares of the field. Yahshua, in those passages and in these in Revelation, is speaking about not being trampled down on the wayside and devoured by the birds of the air. Not springing up, lacking moisture and withering away. And not falling among thorns which spring up with you and choke you. Overcoming is about falling on good ground, springing up and yielding a crop 100-fold. And after having read those parables, I think we have a good idea and a good understanding of what Yahshua is saying in Revelation 2:17 when he speaks of the hidden manna to eat. He is speaking of the good word of Yahweh. If you would turn to the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 1, we read, "Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply." So I ask you, has anything changed since the first chapters of Genesis where Elohim issued the first commands to obey him and go forth and multiply? So continuing, "And go in and possess the land of which Yahweh swore to your fathers." Deuteronomy 8, verse 2. "And you shall remember that Yahweh your Elohim led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not." Now, can you see how keeping the commandments is an issue of one's heart? Verse 3. "So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh." That is life. That is the tree of life. When we eat of every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh. Whether the scripture is speaking of eating of the fruit of the tree of life or eating the manna from heaven, it all goes back to obedience to the word of Yahweh, his commandments. And why does Yahweh persist in feeding his chosen ones in spite of our disobedience? If we go to the book of John in chapter 3 and verse 16, and you probably have this memorized, why does Yahweh persist in feeding us? John 3:16, for Yahweh so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For Yahweh did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of Yahweh. And this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen that they have been done in Yahweh. Now, what is John saying here? Well, most people just read 3:16. They don't read what comes later, talking about the deeds, righteous and unrighteous deeds. What is John saying? He's saying the one who does the deeds of the truth, in other words, he who does the will of Yahweh, it is he who shall be saved. To use a well-worn cliche, this is not rocket science. This is not complicated. But because we as a nation have inherited doctrines of false worship that fly in the face of Scripture itself, the truth has been essentially been thrown out, trampled upon, and ridiculed as something prehistoric. Literally. We have now evolved, the theologians say. We are now under the law of grace. Evolved? Do you understand that there is nothing to evolve from? Grace has always been a part of the plan of salvation. And so has judgment. Stop the lies. Yahweh is the Elohim of creation, not evolution. He did not set up this world for it to be destroyed by mankind. He did not say, in the beginning, Elohim created proteins which randomly came together to form amino acids, which were then struck by lightning and became amoebas. He didn't say that. And he also didn't say, Yahweh your Elohim will raise up for you a prophet from your midst, and he shall be the missing link between the prehistoric Jew and the modern Christian. The Messiah was 100% Hebrew. He was an Israelite of the tribe of Judah. He was definitely not of the religion of Judaism. And he was definitely not of the religion of Christianity. It is written in Deuteronomy chapter 18 and verse 15. Deuteronomy 18 and 15. Yahweh your Elohim will raise up for you a prophet like me. And this is Moses speaking. From your midst, from your brethren. Him you shall hear. Now the phrase, him you shall hear is not a prophecy necessarily, but it is a command. The scripture that then says in verse 17, and Yahweh said to me, and this is Moses, what they have spoken is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you, speaking to Moses, from among their brethren, and I will put my words, I will put my law, I will put my teachings in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, when Yahshua speaks, he's not speaking of his own. He's speaking the words of Yahweh. So when he says, if you love me, obey my commandments, he is speaking as Yahweh, in the authority of Yahweh. Not just love God and love your fellow man. Yahshua is saying, obey the commandments of Yahweh. And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, this is Yahweh speaking, whoever will not hearken unto and obey my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. But the prophet who presumes to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or who speaks in the name or character of other gods, that prophet shall die. Yahweh Elohim set up this world for it to be kept and tended to, exactly as he set up his teachings. Not to be greedily raped for profit, not to be destroyed, but to be fulfilled. Isn't that what Yahshua said? I came not to destroy, but to fulfill the word of Yahweh. I am the word. Follow me. Did he not say this? People. Yahshua came to restore the Father's word among us. He came to plant the seed of the tree of life, that we might be trees of righteousness, producing good fruit and scattering the good seed that is made, that is inside the fruit of the Spirit to the nations. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, Psalm 1, verse 1, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor stands in the path of the transgressors of the law of Yahweh, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the word of Yahweh, and in his word he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. The wicked are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners stand in the congregation of the righteous. For Yahweh knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked shall perish. Scripture reiterates over and over, and I know that's redundant, how important the law of Yahweh is to salvation. The law itself is not salvation. It was never meant to be. The law can save no one. It was given as a tutor to teach the way of righteousness, and to be the yardstick by which we are measured for the white garments of the bride or the burial clothes of the second death. In Yahshua alone is found salvation. That is his name, the salvation of Yahweh. One cannot sever himself from the law of Yahweh and still follow Yahshua. He was sent to be the perfect representative of Yahweh, to show what it looks like to be obedient to Yahweh and to lead believers on the righteous path into the kingdom of Yahweh. Yahshua was not sent to usher in a new world order where the law and order of Yahweh are as rare as gold at Fort Knox, where everyone is allowed to do as they please. No. Yahshua came to represent his father and his father's ways. Remember, Yahshua speaks the words of his father. The word remember in Hebrew means not to recall, but to speak in behalf of. When the scripture says remember, it means speak in behalf of. So speak in behalf of Yahweh. Let us speak. Let us remember. Let us speak in behalf of Yahweh and do not raise our hands against him. The scripture is crystal clear about obedience to the Father. It is also crystal clear from scripture that the extreme promotion of illicit and defiant religiosity in the world today provokes a cry of heresy to someone preaching obedience to the law of Yahweh. Matthew 10 and verse 21. Matthew 10:21. Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, for the sake of my character, which is obedience to my Father. But he who endures to the end, now how many times have we heard this phrase, will be saved. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Layer upon layer of lies upon lies have covered the truth of Yahweh, so that the truth now is indeed hidden. What I'm saying is that we as a people have been hiding the truth, but it is right in front of our eyes. If you have not received eyes that can perceive and ears that can understand, it will remain a hidden secret mystery to you. I say, may Yahweh remove your blindness so you can see. And may he unstop your ears. May he unstop our ears that we can hear the word of Yahweh. Now the second part of Revelation 2:17 reads, and I will give him, he who overcomes, a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it. The word stone here is the Greek word bisephos, which means a pebble, but one used as a counter or ballot. A verdict of acquittal or a ticket of admission. And it can mean a vote or a voice. So it's not just an ordinary stone. It appears to be a stone of great worth due to the power imbued within it. Is it a ticket to the kingdom? Does it represent the power to judge or provide the entitlement to witness the righteous or wicked deeds of others? This word is only used one other time in the New Testament. It is when Paul cast his vote or voice against those who believed in Yahshua the Messiah in Acts 26, verse 10, before he was confronted and changed by Yahshua himself. This white stone, the stone, was the voice that Paul issued that condemned those who believed in Yahshua. I don't know, but perhaps the new name written on it, which no one knows except him who receives it, is a clue. The Greek word for name here is onomos, which means authority. Is authority like the word glory? Does a stone with a new name on it represent the gift of a degree of power and glory? Could it mean the voice of authority? Revelation 5, verse 8. Revelation 5, verse 8 reads, "Now when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to Yahweh by your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our Elohim, and we shall reign on the earth." And we shall reign on the earth. Yeah, I guess that's pretty much what I consider to be, you know, authority. It makes me shake in my boots. So if Yahweh never changes, and he gave us his law, and we are to be placed in an authoritative position in the kingdom of Yahweh, don't you think it would be important to have a working understanding of his law? Goodness! Through what other law would we be held accountable? People, wake up! Finally, let me conclude with a word about the word white. Okay? As in the white stone. The word white in this passage is the Greek word leukos, from the Greek word leuke, and means light. Okay? White light, which I know is redundant. White means light, so white light means light light. But white light, in a physical sense, is made up of every wave of visible light. The electromagnetic radiation that our eyes can see, from ultraviolet to infrared. What we can see in our physical eyes is but a sliver of the vast array of electromagnetic radiation which we cannot see. From microwaves to radio waves. Did you know that radio waves are just a form of light we cannot see? Night vision goggles and infrared or ultraviolet telescopes that we send out into space take these invisible waves and electronically alter them so that we can see things at night or through buildings or through the expanse of the universe. These devices are analogous to the power given to us by the word of Yahweh. Essentially, we all own a private set of night vision goggles to see through the darkness of this world. We have our own private satellite telescope with which to view heaven. But for many people, these tools lay dormant, resting on their bookshelves, collecting dust and rusting away until they are not usable at all. The scripture, the Bible, is, if you can receive it, the means by which we can see the hidden manna of Yahweh. The word of Yahweh is the fruit containing the good seed. And so I say, come, let us search for that which is hidden in the darkness of this world. The tree of life. And eat of its fruit. And let us take of its seed and plant the tree of life here in good earth. And let us harvest its fruit until Yahshua returns, until we are made trees of righteousness in the kingdom of Yahweh.